KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Intersex and PDX. Bring the Fire, Wednesday, October 26th at 5 p.m. at the Q Center in Portland. Intersex Awareness Day is October 26th, and this benefit concert will feature local Portland artists and performers to tell this patriarchy what's up. Again, that's Intersex and PDX. Bring the Fire, Wednesday, October 26th, at 5 p.m. at the Q Center, 4115 North Mississippi Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Dia de los Muertos PDX 2016, Wednesday, November 2nd, from noon to 11 p.m. at Audio Cinema in Portland. This annual celebration of the Day of the Dead honors our loved ones who have passed. There will be altars, music, face painting, food, drinks, and more. Again, that's Dia de los Muertos PDX 2016, Wednesday, November 2nd, from noon to 11 p.m. at Audio Cinema, 226 Southeast Madison Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland. And here's what we have coming up for you this morning on KBOO. First, on Political Perspectives, Ralph Nader critiques the two-party system. That's for most of the hour, but we're going to round out the hour with a short segment from the program Between the Lines. At 10 o'clock, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, we'll put a spotlight on the World Series as Native American activists take aim at the Cleveland Indians for perpetuating racist stereotypes with their mascot, Chief Wahoo. And at 11 o'clock on the Recovery Zone, Stephanie Potter speaks with Chad Brown. He's founder of Soul River Runs Wild, about the program and how it promotes healing and conservation. And we thank you, KBOO members, for your generous support. And if you're not a KBOO member, why not? It's so easy to do. You just go to kboo.fm and click where it says donate. Okay, so we're going to listen to Ralph Nader. He's an activist, consumer advocate, and an author. He spoke in Portland last Saturday at an event supporting Multnomah County with Measure 26-184, which would limit money in politics. And by the way, Kristen Yount recorded Mr. Nader's talk for KBOO.
Ralph Nader spoke at the First Unitarian Church in downtown Portland on October 22, 2016. He was promoting his new book, Breaking Through Power, and acknowledged that his groundbreaking work, Unsafe at Any Speed, has been out for 50 years. This talk was sponsored by Vote Yes on 26184. It's a Multnomah County ballot measure to get big money out of politics. Proceeds benefited the Honest Elections Multnomah County. Coming up, you will hear Ralph Nader talking about the upcoming election, beginning with commentary about Hillary Clinton's campaign. Again, you are listening to KBOO, and this is Ralph Nader.
Basically, the message is don't even try, because she soaked up all the donors. If you start calling, you're going to say, I gave to Hillary. Don't even try. It's inevitable. It's going to happen. She's going to be the nominee. And I'm sure if Elizabeth Warren knew then what she knew now after the Bernie Sanders campaign, she would have run. Now, Bernie had nothing to lose. He started out at 3%. Nobody thought he could, you know, break 10%. You know, a democratic socialist? How do you like, that? 74 years old, white hair, you know, not exactly a charismatic speaker, you know, that heavy Brooklyn brogue out of Vermont, right? And he would have, I guarantee you, he would have beat her if it wasn't for two things. Dirty tricks by the Democratic establishment, okay? And now... And that's not a supposition. Look at the WikiLeaks leaks. Because in close races, he could have come out with three out of three early primary, with great momentum. He could have come out Iowa, New Hampshire, Nevada, New Hampshire. He won New Hampshire in a landslide. But he just missed in Iowa and Nevada, and there were some dirty tricks that tipped it one way. And then the other thing is, she starts out with 20%. Of the unelected superdelegates, mostly her cronies in Capitol Hill and the Democratic establishment. That's who the superdelegates are. And he almost beat her. He would have beat her. And now it's dissipating, and all his followers are reporters, what are we going to do? He falls into the Democratic rot because he promised a year ago he'd support the nominee. However, look what that tells us. That tells us that money sometimes is not the big obstacle. Big fat cat money with strings attached, because what he proved was that he could raise $235 million in $27 average contributions over the internet, never have to go to a fat cat fundraiser he gets on his knees in Park Avenue in Beverly Hills, never have to have a super PAC. So basically he showed that you cut out the fat cats, you go down to what ordinary people can write a check for, and then the rest is human energy. It's rallies, it's getting out the vote, all the rest of it. So while money nullifies your vote in many elections, big money neutralizes your vote, that doesn't have to be the case, and the Bernie Sanders example is a way out. But the present system is very corrupt with fat cat money and super PAC money. And the amount of money is just staggering. You heard the earlier speaker, I think it was Dan, talk about how much it costs to run for the state Senate here. I mean, over the last 15 years, 30 years, it's unbelievable. $700,000 or some dollars for a state Senate seat. Money also has stamina more than we do. I hate to say it, because fat cats always have money. They can always write the check, election after election. But citizens, they lose energy after a while. They can go up, and then they get beat, and then they get discouraged, and have to start again. But money has stamina. Part of its devastating effect is always there, and it's there in geometric proportions. And it's really going up like this at the federal level. There's so much money, it's going into super PACs, it's overshadowing the money collected by the Democratic and Republican national committees. And you have guys like Adelson, this gambling czar. Do you know, to show you our culture is in decay, 30, 40 years ago, anybody who was in the gambling industry, never mind a failed gambling czar and corporate welfare king like Donald Trump, wouldn't even have dared talk about it. It would be completely taboo. What? A gambler running for the U.S. presidency? See the culture in decay. The pattern of lies and exaggerations and slander. So there are going to be a lot of local candidates, not to mention some children, who are going to mimic Trump in future. They think they can get away with it. And they're going to mimic Trump unless we turn it around. Now, here's another consequence. Big money in politics takes away your money. You ever think of that? For example, big money in politics leads to weak enforcement to protect your pensions, your consumer dollars, and keep your wages down. When Walmart gives money to these legislators, state and national, the result is they freeze the minimum wage. They don't adjust it for inflation. So here's an example, a real-life example. There are 1 million workers in Walmart today. Just imagine, they're going to work. Lucky if they can get 40 hours, sometimes 30 hours, 25 hours, schedules, messed up. Who cares about the family, the kids? It's all Walmart, run by a CEO who's making $12,000 an hour, not counting benefits. There are 1 million Walmart workers making less today than 1968, adjusted for inflation. That means they're making less than 11 bucks an hour. And why do you think that's the case in one state after another? Well, some states are going up, and Seattle is going up, and others a little bit higher than the government. The federal government is 7.25 an hour, frozen. It's money. Hillary Clinton was on the board of directors of Walmart. She was the last prominent Democrat to support the Democrats' bill in Congress in 2014 to raise it to $10.10 an hour. Money. Money takes your money, big fat cut. You're entitled to take it personally. See how bad a phrase this campaign finance reform is all about? Huh? So when you are not protected, when big banks can open up fake accounts like Wells Fargo, when big banks can rip you off in 1,000 ways, right? It's because the laws are not being enforced. Why are the laws not being enforced? Because big money goes to the White House, big money goes to Congress, and here's the other consequence. They cut enforcement budgets. They cut the number of federal cops on the corporate crime beat to the bone. It's like having a massive crime wave in the streets of New York and only 100 cops. That's another consequence. Here's another one. There's so many of them. Here's another one. Politicians raise money in order to get the vote out. That's one of the ways they spend money. Please vote. Please come out to vote. We have to get our base out. Now, if we were like in Australia, we wouldn't have to worry about that because it's a duty. It's a legal duty. Now, you can get out if you're sick. If you don't vote and you have no excuse, they hit you with a $25 or $50 fine for the electoral pot. And so they get 96% out. And we're lucky if we get 60% out for president and 40% out for congressional elections. And some primaries are down to 8%. And so politicians, good ones too, are spending a lot of money trying to get your vote out because we don't have voting as a universal duty, which I favor. There's only one duty in the Constitution, which is jury duty, and people like to get out of that. But there's the Bill of Rights, the Constitution full of rights, just one duty. And I think if we give people the option of none of the above, binding none of the above, I think that solves the civil liberties problem. All right, so another thing that big money does, there's a lot of quid pro quos. Do you know how money is transferred to politicians? I mean, they don't exactly say, here's $200 or here's $5,000. I want you to send me a letter assuring me that my bill will get a hearing. I mean, that's direct bribery. So it's very indirect. Like, I hope you'll look out for us. You know? And, you know, all kinds of winks or third-party assurances. But one of the things that's done is it kills law enforcement when it comes to corporate outlaws. If you think that your housing codes are not being enforced and protecting tenants in city after city, how come? One is the housing code inspector is totally beleaguered. They don't have enough housing code inspectors. The second is if the housing code inspector really does a terrific job, the housing code inspector hears from upstairs and upstairs, and it's usually an elected official who's getting money from the developers or the apartment buildings association. Now you multiply that in one area after another. Why aren't the auto safety law recalls enforced? Why aren't the pollution control laws enforced? Why aren't the Wall Street crimes enforced? Small enforcement budget, and it all comes back to Congress, and they go up to Congress, and without any fanfare, they cut the budget. Now here's an example. This is to show you how totally nonsense our elections are. One of the reasons why they're so insipid, they don't cover issues that are your concern, they don't talk about them, they usually come down to two or three or four issues, crime in the street, gun control, immigration, you know, recently. But there are all kinds of issues. What about the corporate crime wave, right? Why don't they talk about that? Cracking down on crime in the suites. No? Okay. So here's one. Just pick it out of the hat. You cannot believe the money that's stolen from you because it's stolen indirectly. Okay, so we're looking into this $3.3 trillion that we spend on healthcare. Staggering. It's almost the size of Germany's GDP, just on healthcare. It turns out that 10% of it goes down the drain under a title called Computerized Billing, Fraud, and Abuse. Now that's $330 billion this year. The Pentagon budget is about $650 billion, which is half of the U.S. government's operating expenditures, not counting Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, their insurance. There are so few investigators and prosecutors in the federal government to go after these crooks that they collect about $5 billion of that 330. Medicare alone is drained, according to the federal official figures, of $60 billion a year by corporate crime. Manipulating codes, phantom charges, they got it down to a science. That's $60 billion a year. Never talked about. Now, how come members of Congress who are told again and again by federal officials, you give us a dollar more in enforcement, we'll bring you back 10 in recovery. That's pretty good investment, okay? They will not increase the budget because they go to these dinners, they go to these fundraisers, they go to these PACs, and they're selling out $330 billion a year for a few million dollars of campaign pottage. See the leverage that goes on? I don't want to give you too much of this, but I'll give you one more. I'll give you one more. Okay. One of the things the Republicans are doing, straight out of money in politics, a little bit of venom against the IRS, but mostly money in politics. We try to call the IRS. You ever call it? Wait. You don't get an answer. Because their budget is starvation budget. They're run by a very good guy. I've worked with him for years, John Koskinen. The Republicans want to impeach him. That's because he's doing his job. You see? They want to hold them to, you went after those conservative foundations. Well, he wasn't even there then. But they go after liberal foundations too. Any group that has a overtly political name, like the Tea Party groups, they attract attention, the IRS. Why not? They're tax exempt. They're not supposed to be involved in electoral politics. So the IRS now estimates $400 billion of uncollected taxes a year. That's quite apart from the tax savings, the tax avoidance. You know the difference between tax avoidance and tax evasion. The tax avoider makes sure that he bribes his way to Congress in order to make legal what is illegal. So it's called tax avoidance, what would be illegal otherwise. It's amazing when you look at it in great detail. You know the importance of detail? It really gets you angry. It gets you empirically angry. Whereas general, you know, the bunch of crooks, government is the problem, not the solution. You know. It doesn't go anywhere. Corporations, you know, they hire people. Get off their back. $400 billion a year. Now, the ratio, again, is every buck brings in $7 to $10 of enforcement. Now, okay, some of this is underground economy, you know, the usual repair. You give money to some repair person. But let's say $200 billion of it is really bad stuff. You imagine what that would do in terms of helping to rebuild our country? Imagine what it would do to school renovation and public transit and changing that library, bringing it up to date, setting up a community health clinic. So you have all these huge drains, and we're not even getting to the military budget. Why is the military budget sacrosanct? That's the phrase. Never is criticized by the Democrat or Republican Party. Hillary won't criticize it. Trump won't criticize it. They all want to either modernize it, that's the Democratic word for expanding it, or they want to expand it, that's the Republican word for increasing it. And it's because there is this military-industrial complex that Eisenhower warned us about. And here's how it works. The Pentagon has someone, a major or higher, on every member of Congress. Because they're always lobbying. They got to get this money, they got to get that budget, they got to get this cost overrun paid for, and so on. In the meantime, the contractors, Lockheed Martin, Boeing, Raytheon, and so on, they want to hire these guys in the Pentagon because they're influence peddlers. And so the generals and the admirals and the colonels, they just bide their time, put in their time. Some of them are honest, and they don't do it. But there's a whole pot of gold out there. So when they're negotiating the contracts with Lockheed Martin on the cost overrun F-35 that's going through the roof, they're saying in the back of their mind, you know, I really want to work for Lockheed Martin when I finish my 20 or 30 years in the Pentagon. And that's one reason why the Pentagon budget is sacrosanct. To the degree where it's the only department in the government that is unauditable. The Government Accountability Office, the accounting arm of Congress, first-rate agency, every year reports on all the departments and agencies and ends up with an audited budget. That's the law. Since 1992, you violate the law if you have an agency that does not provide auditable information. Well, the only one violating it is the Pentagon. Since 1992, and are always trying to do it. Well, don't worry, another 3 years, we'll do it another four. How about starting with the Marine budget? And it never happens. Why, can you imagine having half of the government's operating expenditures unaudited? Here's what happens. And this is due to money and politics and the long trail and the grease and the cowardliness and the self-censorship and the bureaucratic fear from being hammered by some senator or representative and what have you. So $9 billion were lost in Iraq in the first year, acknowledged by the Pentagon. They don't know where it is. They don't know what happened to it. Hey, you know, for most people, $9 million, a lot of money. $9 billion not accounted for? How about this? The Air Force was caught buying billions of dollars of supplies because they didn't know what was in their air warehouses, and later on they found out they had the supplies already all over the world, you know, no audit. My favorite is I met a Delta airline pilot recently, and you know, we got talking. Most of them are military pilots, and then they go to the civilian. And I said, well, you fly for the Air Force? He said, oh, yeah, yeah. And one thing led to another before he headed to the gate to fly the plane. And here's what he told me. He was flying in Okinawa, and just before the fiscal year, the tradition of the Air Force is they got to spend the entire budget. If they don't spend the entire budget, they can't get the same budget or more the next year, because some honest people in Congress will say, why do you need more? You didn't spend it all. So you know what they told them to do? And this is routine. I know you're not going to believe this because you've still got a residual of innocence in you. Okay? Okay? Here's what they did. They get up in the air in a squadron, and they dump the fuel in the ocean. So the whole fuel budget is used up before June 30. That's just the beginning. How about this one? The Libyan war wouldn't have happened without Hillary, by the way. You want to see. I'll give you a little prediction. Everyone now is scared of Trump. You know, Democrats, horrible Trump. He's unstable. Everything is a bruised ego. Gets up 3 in the morning, and Twitter is about a former Miss Universe who's overweight. I mean, you got a combination of Dr. Strangelove and Captain Queeg here. Okay? So, but Hillary is going to give you nightmares. Hillary is the candidate of war and Wall Street based on her own experience. Now, here's how Hillary toppled the regime in Libya, which led to unbelievable continuing chaos, weaponry spilling into 7 African countries, tens of thousands of deaths, refugees in Libya, Mali, and so on. She got called up from some people in Britain and France, said, hey, you know, Gaddafi, he's mending fences, he's gotten rid of his weapons of mass destruction, but he's a bad guy, and we can topple him. And so Hillary, you know, she scares the generals, Hillary. She is bad, bad, bad hawk. And she goes to the White House, and Obama calls in Secretary of Defense Gates. And Gates says, don't do it, Mr. President, because do you know what's going to happen the day after? Are we ready? You got tribal warfare, sectarianism, outside interference, militias, and it's going to spill into Africa, the rest of Africa, North Africa, Central Africa. And Hillary said, Mr. President, we have highest assurances from our British and French allies that this will be an aircraft war. Nobody will get hurt. It's just a matter of bombing, and we'll help the rebels. It was an incipient civil war. We'll help the rebels, and we'll get rid of another dictator. So Obama is saying, well, we're never going to get that money from Congress. No problem. They took it out of the black budget in the Department of Defense and other places. They spent $1.5 billion to overturn the regime. In the process, by the way, they killed 7,000 people. And listen to this. There is no congressional declaration of war. Constitutional crime number one. There is no congressional authorization of funds. Constitutional crime number two. There is no congressional appropriation of funds to pursue the war. Constitutional crime number three. That's the kind of Congress we have because they're in bed with the fat cats of the military-industrial complex. And now it's going to Somalia, Yemen. You don't think it's coming here? It's coming here for a very simple reason. We're provoking more and more of these warriors or fighters or called terrorists. We kill a lot of civilians too, 1 million Iraqi civilians, that's all, have died so far from our criminal invasion of Iraq. But what happened is that they're getting more numerous, starts out with a gang in northeast Afghanistan, 9/11. And the more we kill their leaders, the more they replace, the more they spread. Now they're in 20 countries, not just ISIS and Syria and Iraq. And they're getting smarter. Number one, they're getting smarter in social media. Number two, they're getting smarter in the kind of weapons they use. And they don't have a Navy or Air Force. Can you imagine 3,500 fighters poorly trained in Mosul? Or, you know, it's a big deal. They got the biggest military power imagined, and they're going to take weeks to take it. 30,000 Taliban in sandals, Kalashnikovs, and so on, holding down the huge Afghan army and the U.S. military. Why are so few people with no Air Force and Navy, why are they holding us down? Because they have the biggest argument you'll ever have in the world. They want to expel the invader. The same if we had an invader. They will expel the invader. And if people don't support them in the villages, they can force them to support them. Because who's going to stand up against fighters who are going to expel the invader? The U.S. and the West. Been around for 110 years. Carving them up, supporting dictatorships, killing people, arming them, giving horrible people cover in the United Nations. And they wonder why? They want to get in our backyard, and they're going to get in our backyard. They have suicide bombers lined up. They can't use them fast enough from Chechnya and from Afghanistan, elsewhere. Young men usually, sometimes young women, with nothing to lose, impoverished, no future, nothing to lose. And they might get some money for their wretchedly poor families if they become suicide bombers. Now, this is a vicious, failing foreign and military policy. It's endangering our country. It's killing people over half the world. And we elect one of the war hawks of all hawks, President of the United States, because the other guy's a buffoon. That's the choice we get. Don't we deserve better? And to talk about being a toady of Wall Street. I mean, she can't wait to go to social gatherings. She hugs Henry Kissinger, the war criminal of Cambodia. She hugs Lloyd Blankfein, the head of Goldman Sachs, that was bailed out by billions of dollars and strip-mined all kinds of pensions and mutual funds. You know, when they were paying her for these speeches, and she won't release the transcripts. Some of them were released a little bit by WikiLeaks. They're paying her $5,000 a minute. A minute, right? And here's the contract. I saw her lecture agency contract, the Harry Walker Agency. Closed doors, banking conventions, you know, other conventions, drug industry conventions. Closed doors, no press, and she made the convention people pay $1,000 for a stenographer in order to provide a transcript exclusively for her possession. And why doesn't she want to release the transcripts? I've done a video on her release of transcripts. I've demanded it, so have others. It's because that's why 60 to 65% of people think she's untrustworthy. She says one thing behind closed doors to these corporate fat cats to get money and everything. And she says another thing on the hustings mimicking the language of Bernie Sanders. And it's already beginning. Watch the betrayal of Bernie Sanders. Watch the betrayal of the progressive wing of the Democratic Party on domestic and foreign policy. Yesterday, Senator Schumer was quoted this way. He's going to be the head of the U.S. Senate if they recover the Senate, taking Harry Reid's place. He said, now check this out. He said, Hillary Clinton, I, and Speaker Paul Ryan believe in corporate tax cuts for repatriating trillions of U.S. corporate profits abroad. It's already beginning. They're cutting a deal with Paul Ryan, a guy who's to the right of the right, makes Goldwater look liberal. And they're already cutting a deal with him before the election. Watch the betrayal. Money in politics. Money distorts public budgets. Why is it that they don't have money, as Michael Moore has pointed out? They don't have money for the schools. They don't have money for combating epidemics, Center for Disease Control. They don't have money for job training. They don't have money to repair our public works. They don't have money to stem the scourge of soil erosion, very little talked about. They don't have money to resuscitate certain water bodies. They don't have money, but they have money for the 13th aircraft carrier. You know who our competitor is in the world in aircraft carriers? Italy. Italy has two. Now, aircraft carriers, there's only one reason for aircraft carriers, because in any war, they're a sitting duck for missiles. The only reason is force projection against China. The only reason is empire. You know, they're loaded with troops and planes, and you know, they shoot up Central Asia and Afghanistan people and Iraq and so on in the past. That's $13 billion. And it's $1 billion a year to operate an aircraft carrier, one aircraft carrier. The distortion of budgets law enforcement, they have all kinds of police and paraphernalia in the streets and so on and so forth. No, virtually no budget for corporate crime enforcement, as I mentioned earlier. The theft of our future is well underway. The theft of our future means a corporate state. It means Wall Street over Washington, simple metaphor, turning Washington against us and serving big business for tax loopholes, giveaways, subsidies, handouts, etc. We own the public lands, and the resources are given away either at bargain basement prices or free. I don't know how many of you know that hard rock minerals under the 1872 Mining Act, that's gold, silver, molybdenum, etc., are given away to any company that discovers them on public lands for $5 an acre. So Barrick Oil Gold Company got $10 billion of gold in our land in Nevada a few years ago for $5,200. No royalties back to the U.S. government. Those things wouldn't happen without the Mining Congress lobby blocking efforts by citizen groups in Washington to upgrade the Mining Act of 1872. So here we have the corporate state with the government power, and they are strategically planning. Just look at the list now. The corporations, we're not talking small business. The big corporations, the global corporations, transverse the world, pitting governments against one another. The big corporations are, this is what they do, it's in their DNA. They strategically plan. They have to anticipate, predict, ward off opponents, undermine resistance, co-opt, buy, bribe, whatever. They have to have predictability for profits and sales and positioning against other companies. They are strategically planning our government, our elections, our politics. They're strategically planning our food, our health care, our energy. They're strategically planning childhood, commercial exploitation of childhood, undermining parental authority, all the TV programs, junk food, junk drink, more diabetes, more overweight children. It's okay, it's profits for General Foods and for the junk food industry. They're strategically planning our environment. They fight any efforts to control coal burning, pollution, and other toxics. They're strategically planning our foreign and military policy. They plan our military budget, for which enough is never enough. They're planning our foreign policy because they have to have the U.S. Marines protect their investments overseas and have for 100 years or so. They're even strategically planning our genetic inheritance. They have patents on thousands of gene sequences. They're just getting ready. They're strategically planning government research and development that built all the new industries whose CEOs brag about as if it's their doing. That strategically planning government R&D, half of the major pharmaceuticals you paid for to develop and clinically test. They strategically planning the taxpayer to fund the basic research for nanotechnology, biotechnology, containerization innovation, semiconductor. The Pentagon invested to develop the internet. Now, isn't it time for we the people to strategically plan our own future? Huh? Big money in politics has another damage. They make money for big media. Look at the presidential debates, right? Big money comes in, and CNN makes more money, and Fox makes more money. For the first time, the media has admitted that elections and money in elections and advertisements, et cetera, are a profit center, a major, major profit center, far more than during the period of the elections than commercial ads. And what happens when the media looks at big money ads as a profit center and encourages the kind of insipid, vicious debates, the Republican primary debates, for example, that increase the ratings. And Donald Trump once, in the early primary, said, I'm going to boycott Fox News and I'm going to depress their profits. How do you like that for a breakthrough? Can you imagine? The bravado, but he knows it's true. because he's the one who brought him the big ratings. All right, so this is the 50th anniversary year of Unsafe at Any Speed. And I see. And it put a lot of forces in motion, started a lot of groups, and, you know, it couldn't happen today, unfortunately. And so I'm talking to Chuck Todd, and, you know, about a year or so ago, and of Meet the Press. And I said, you know, it's the 50th anniversary. Lawrence Spivak had me on when I was 31 years old, and he gave me most of the hour, and it got the whole issue before the country. Meet the Press was really a big deal then, and would you like to have me on the 50th anniversary? You could have a clip, you know, black and white TV, Larry Spivak. And he said, sign me up. And he hasn't been able to do it for a year because New York won't let him do it. You see, and it's not just me. The electoral process, bought and paid for, has now put the civil society, the citizen groups who actually get things done all over the country, off limits. They can't get on. They're not asked for their opinions of the candidates on TV. They're not asked for their opinions on energy policy and health policy and tax policy and transit policy and housing policy. They have been put them off limits. Money. Just a couple more. Why do the rich and powerful hate America's children? What? They don't hate America's children. Are you kidding? Compare the way we treat America's children to Western Europe. There's paid maternity leave in Western Europe, paid child care, paid family sick leave. The way the French treat children in terms of medical care would shame us. We have 15 million children going to bed hungry at night. We have millions of them living in hovels, if indeed they're not homeless. We have millions of children without health care coverage or just bad, incomplete health care coverage. They go to rotten schools in the inner city with broken desks and leaking roofs and freezing winters and lack of decent cafeteria. I've been to those schools. They should be eliminated, completely demolished. I was at one in Chicago where the teacher invited me during one of my campaigns, and it was a fifth grade class. He's since written a book on this. And he invited me, and I said, why are you inviting me? He said, I want you to come see the school. Because when I started teaching in September, I asked the students, what would you like to study? He said, 10-year-olds, what would you like to study? And you know what they wanted to have studied as a project? Their school. They wanted to replace it with a new school, and they wanted to document it, and they wanted to tell their elders how they were being treated and undermined and endangered. And I looked out the window, which was broken at the time, of one of the school classrooms, and I saw the giant skyscrapers of Chicago, the city that works. That's their motto, right? So let me tell you, it's not just what we have in our heads. We don't have fire in the belly. We're not gonna break our routines. We're gonna go away from gatherings like this and say, how interesting. Didn't you hear that young man? He was in law school. What a fiery orator. How interesting. I don't want people to go away saying, how interesting. I want people to go away saying, we're going to form Congress watchdog groups, we're going to form state legislative watchdog groups, and we're going to use that extremely powerful branch of government to turn around the other two branches of government, and we're going to get way long overdue transformations in this country, because when we the people organize, and when we go for what people need, where they live, work, and raise their families, we have left-right coalitions that are unbeatable no matter how much money is in politics and no matter how powerful the corporations are. Let, Last point, I'm sure you've been waiting for this. Why restrict how much money private people can put into politics? We should eliminate all private money in politics and have publicly funded elections. And one way of doing it is a $300 voluntary check off on your tax return. You don't have to do it $1 if you don't. And a certain amount of free time on our airways. We own them. We're the landlords. For radio and TV, for ballot-qualified candidates, and get done with it. Get done with it. But this is the first step. This is a clarion call. Look at all the groups. Support it here. This is a clarion call, and you're going to see how easy it is on November 8th. And you're going to go to the next step and the next step. Public elections should be funded by public money. It can be done voluntarily, like I mentioned, or it could be done by a public allocation of money. After all, they shovel out hundreds of billions of dollars for corporate mismanagement, corporate welfare, crony capitalism, and then they say, oh, no, don't spend $1 billion, $2 to clean up our election corruption. So if they don't do it voluntarily, we should do it by public funding. But whatever it is, the goal has to be to let your vote count, to stop voter suppression, to stop obstructing third-party candidates from giving you more voices and choices, to end gerrymandering, to have nonpartisan districts, electoral districts, and then to open up the debates so never again we can be accused of rationing debates. We don't ration Hostess Twinkies. We don't ration trampolines. We don't ration cosmetics. Why are we rationing debates? By a corporate debate commission misnamed as the Commission on Presidential Debates, funded by Anheuser-Busch, AT&T, Ford Motor Company, run by the two parties to exclude competition so that you are left with two bad choices and told, shut up and vote for one of them. That's not good enough for the American people. And we got to break up the two-party tyranny.
You've been listening to a speech by Ralph Nader, activist, consumer advocate, and author. He spoke in Portland last Saturday at an event supporting campaign for Yes on Measure 26-184, which would limit money in politics in Multnomah County. And now we'll hear a little bit of music and then get right to news and headlines from Between the Lines Radio News Magazine. And stay tuned at 10 for Air Cascadia on KBOO. KBOO Portland.
Welcome to Between the Lines, presenting news and analysis of critical issues affecting our region, the nation, and the world.
United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon sent a confidential letter to the UN Security Council in early October, complaining that South Sudan is undermining its commitment to accept the deployment of 4,000 UN peacekeepers to the war-torn East African nation. South Sudan, founded in 2011, is in the midst of a three-year civil war, where over the summer, 200,000 people fled their homes during a new round of fighting as high-level peace negotiations got underway. The Security Council is now considering imposing an arms embargo against South Sudan for its failure to honor its pledge to accept the new peacekeepers. In recent months, top UN officials and UN installations have come under attack by government soldiers, putting vital humanitarian work at risk. The UN Security Council wants to authorize peacekeepers to defend the airport and other critical infrastructure, but opposition to increasing the number of UN peacekeepers has grown. One of President Salva Kiir's top advisors warned this summer that the deployment of UN troops would constitute a declaration of war and invasion of the country, jeopardizing future peacekeeping. A leading moderate Uyghur activist, Ilham Todi, who is serving a life sentence in China, was awarded the prestigious Swiss-based Martine Ahnals Prize for Human Rights on October 11th. Todi, known as China's Mandela, was convicted of separatism in a Xinjiang court in a region rife with ethnic conflict between the Han Chinese majority and Muslim Uyghur minority population. The Martine Ahnals Foundation praised Todi for rejecting separatism and violence and instead working towards reconciliation based on respect for Uyghur culture, which has for decades been subjected to religious, cultural, and political repression. The decision to honor Ilham Todi is likely to spark an angry response from Beijing. Nicholas Bekelin, Amnesty International's East Asia director, said, "By arresting Todi, Beijing betrayed its fear that discussions of any kind about the situation of Uyghurs in China would inevitably bring attention to the extraordinarily repressive policies under which they live." A month before Election Day, Maricopa County, Arizona, Sheriff Joe Arpaio, whose officers patrol Greater Phoenix, was charged with criminal contempt of court for refusing to follow a court order to halt immigration sweeps. In 2011, U.S. Federal District Judge Murray Snow ordered Arpaio to end police stops of individuals based solely on their immigration status. The U.S. Justice Department is also considering an obstruction of justice charge against Arpaio over the sheriff's refusal to turn over 50 computer hard disks relating to an informant in Seattle who was hired by the sheriff's attorneys to investigate Judge Snow's wife. Arpaio, who is 84 and running for his 7th term as sheriff, called the indictment a political attack. The sheriff, a supporter of Donald Trump and an early backer of his birther movement, insisted that he was going to fight back and expected to be reelected. Recent polls show Arpaio trailing Democrat Paul Panzone by 10 percentage points. In recent years, the right-wing sheriff has lost popularity after a wave of investigations and political stunts, such as forming a citizen posse to find Obama's birth certificate. Still, Arpaio has a $12 million political war chest that he's using to campaign hard to win re-election in November. This week's news summary was compiled by Bob Nixon. For Between the Lines, I'm Elaine Osowski.
On September 23rd, the National Council of Incarcerated and Formerly Incarcerated Women and Girls held a conference titled Real Women, Real Voices at Yale University Law School in New Haven, Connecticut. Panelists included women who had served years in state and federal prisons, many for nonviolent drug-related offenses. Two of the panels featured remote interviews with women who were still incarcerated. Family members of individuals who had been or are still in prison participated as well. Several of the speakers were women who had recently been pardoned by President Obama in a White House initiative that has committed to reduce the sentences of more than 700 individuals convicted of drug-related nonviolent offenses. One of the women speaking at the conference was Arlinda Trey Johns, who goes by the name of Trey. She described how, as a young woman with responsibility for raising her siblings' 7 children plus a child of her own, she was convicted on drug sales charges and writing a bad check for the purchase of school supplies. Trey served 8 years in prison. Since her release, she's been working with the Council of Incarcerated and Formerly Incarcerated Women and Girls and plans to attend law school with the goal of advocating for criminal justice reform. Between the Lines' Melinda Tuhus spoke with Johns about her experience in the criminal justice system and her plans for the future.
I sold $450 worth of drugs because I had 6 kids in school and 2 in daycare. I took the judge receipts from Walmart for protractors and crayons and stuff like that. And he allowed me to stay out on bond to complete my last semester of school. And 5 days after I graduated, on the dean's list and the honor roll, he sentenced me to 13 years in federal prison for less than $500 worth of drugs.
And where did you serve?
I wasn't the most compliant inmate because I wasn't happy. So I was at Greenville, Illinois, Hazleton, West Virginia, Waseca, Minnesota, Pekin, Illinois, and Danbury, Connecticut.
And these are all federal prisons?
Yes, these are all federal prisons.
How does it feel to you to know that you spent years in prison for a pretty minor offense? It's almost like stealing bread to feed your family.
Right.
And people, you know, who have committed all kinds of horrendous crimes, you know, rapes and murders and illegally gotten gains of millions of dollars, either don't go to prison at all or serve shorter sentences.
It's disheartening because when you lock up a mother, especially with a small child, you basically destroy the fiber of that family. You know, and if you don't have a father figure in the home or whatever, then, you know, you leave those children to be raised by grandmothers and things like that. But when I sat and I seen people come in and they stolen millions and millions of dollars and destroy people's lives and their kids' college funds, and they get 4 years and 5 years, it's very disheartening, you know, to sit somewhere for 10 years because you did something that any person would do. You help children. That's what you do for children. So it was just, it's still unbelievable. I'm still waiting on somebody to tell me I was on candid camera.
So when did you get out?
I got out the first time, actually, in 2011. I got out August 2nd, 2011. And I got employed August 4th. At my second year out of prison, I was making $62,000 a year as an engineer at Continental Tire.
And then you said you got out for the first time?
My mother had a stroke last year in 2015, and I went to Chicago because I live in Southern Illinois at the time, and I went to Chicago to see about my mom, and my probation officer violated me for leaving the district without permission, and they put me back in prison for 4 months after I had been out for 3.5 years.
Oh, God. So did you lose your job?
I lost my job, I lost my house, I lost my car. I had just purchased a $169,000 house. It was my first house I ever bought. I lost my job, my house, my car. I lost everything.
Tell me about where things are for you now.
Well, now my son just graduated high school. He's 19. He's gone, so I'm free. And I've been able to be a instrumental part of the movement. Over the last month, I've traveled from North Carolina to Chicago, New Orleans, California, Washington, D.C., you name it, I've been there. And it's now my dedication is to making sure another woman doesn't lose her child for nothing.
So what's your goal now?
I have a waiver to take the LSAT on December 6th at the University of Tennessee. And I also have a waiver to apply for law school for free in Hawaii and Villanova.
You seem to have quite a bit of drive and commitment. So what do you want to do going to law school? What would be your desired outcome?
To have oral arguments in front of the Supreme Court dismantling the conspiracy law altogether. It's an illegal law. I mean, if you had 13 seconds of law school training, you know the conspiracy law is illegal.
Can you explain that a minute, why is it illegal?
One of the things that jump out at me as being illegal is it conspiracy. It means you conspire with one or more persons to commit a crime. But in the federal system, they will convict one person of conspiracy. And that's impossible because if you're conspiring, you're conspiring with. So I can't do it by myself. But you have people serving 25 and 30 years for conspiring with themselves. I want to get rid of the conspiracy law before I die.
That was former inmate Arlinda Trey Johns with the National Council of Incarcerated and Formerly Incarcerated Women and Girls. For more information on the council and other resources for prisoners returning to the community, visit our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org. You've been listening to Between the Lines, a weekly program presenting news and analysis of critical issues affecting our region, the nation, and the world. Between the Lines is produced and distributed by Squeaky Wheel Productions. If you have suggestions for topics and guests, please contact Between the Lines through our website at btlonline.org, where you can hear our current and archived programs in MP3 and streaming audio, and support our show which is celebrating 25 years on the air in 2016. There you can also subscribe to free weekly podcasts, program summaries, and interview transcripts. Follow us on Facebook at Between the Lines Radio News Magazine and on Twitter at BTL Radio News. Our theme music was written by Richard Hill and Jody Gray and performed by Mikata. This week's program was produced by Susan Bramhall, Anna Manzo, Bob Nixon, Elaine Osowski, Gary Trujillo, Melinda Tuhus, and Jeff Yates. For Between the Lines, I'm Scott Harris.
And this is KBOO Portland. The time is 9:59. Coming up on KBOO at 10:15, it's Flashpoints. Today we put a spotlight on the World Series as Native American activists take aim at the Cleveland Indians for perpetuating racist stereotypes with their mascot, Chief Wahoo. At 11 o'clock on the Recovery Zone, Stephanie Potter speaks with Chad Brown, founder of Soul River Runs Wild, about that program and how it promotes healing and conservation. But for now, we go to Air Cascadia with your host, Chris Andre. That'll be immediately following the next announcement.
This Saturday, October 29th, KBOO is happy to co-sponsor the Enchanted Forest Halloween event with the Mother Earth School. The event will take place from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Jean's Farm, 3707 Southeast Johnson Creek Boulevard. It's recommended for kids ages 2 to 8. We must sign up in advance. More information can be found on the website MotherEarthSchool.org or on the right-hand side of the KBOO website, KBOO.fm, under Community Events.